Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.
Jennifer Zamparelli, 2FM, good morning. So in 2012, my next guest married the love of her life. Unlike most married couples, there was no big wedding or loved up honeymoon. Why? Well, because her new husband is in a Texas prison serving a 75-year sentence for murder. Heike Phelan, you are very welcome to the show. I cannot wait to hear your story. Good morning.
Morning, Jen. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for doing this, first of all. Can you talk to me about William and how he came to be in your life?
Yeah, I've been writing to another guy in prison in America. He was a friend of a friend. I'd done a Christmas card swap through advice and support website called Prison Talk. And I put his name forward, you know, for people to send Christmas cards to him. But in return, I also had sent Christmas cards to a list of other people. The list was supplied to me. And one of those cards went to William's friend, who said, "Oh, I'm not bothered with that. Do you want it?" And he said, "Yeah, I'll have it." And a couple of weeks later, I got a letter from him, even though that wasn't the intention, you know, to start any sort of pen pal or relationship. It was literally just, you know, a bit of a cheer-up thing for Christmas so that these guys knew they weren't entirely forgotten.
Is that what initially your, you know, your motivation for using this website, Prison Talk, was to let these guys know that they're not alone, even though a lot of them have done, you know, pretty bad things in their life?
Yeah, I mean, the Prison Talk website itself is sort of a support website with a lot of legal advice and things like that for families and friends of those who are in prison. So then they have all these sort of schemes, you know, for different times of the year, birthdays or Christmas or whatever. That's the Christmas one, the only one I ever did.
Okay. And what was he there for?
He was convicted of a law that is called party to murder. So that means that you have the person who committed the offence, and then he was convicted as the person who was with the guy who committed the offence. So anybody who is considered, you know, with the person who committed it in Texas for being equally responsible, even though he actually didn't know what was going on at the time, not till afterwards. But because he'd arrived at this place with the guy who did it, he was deemed equally responsible.
Heike, did you ever get to talk to him? Were phone calls allowed?
Yeah, the first few years was just letters. We've had phone calls now for about 4 years.
4 years, wow.
Quite a complicated setup to get phone calls in the Texas prison system. But we have phone calls, and then because of the COVID pandemic the past year and they stopped all in-person visits, Texas has had to pull the socks up and introduce video visits. So we've had those for the past 4 months. It's, at the minute, it's only once a month, but made a huge difference as well.
Well, let's talk about the first time you made the trip to Texas and visit William. Was there a turning point when you decided to make that visit? Did he ask you? How did that all happen?
Oh, no, he never asked me. I don't think he ever anticipated that I'd actually come out and visit.
Right.
It's a good 18 months before I went out to visit, and you know, I work in tourism, so the end of the summer season, I thought, well, I could do the holiday now myself, so you know what, why not go out there and visit him? That's just what I did. Slightly strange holiday, but
I can imagine. I can imagine how you were feeling on that flight over. Did you have romantic feelings for him at this stage?
No. In fact, it was very, very much the opposite because, you know, I had big high walls up around myself. You know, I wasn't letting him in that way. It was I made him work for every bit of, you know, trust that I gave him. You know, that was never my intention. I mean, as time went on, you know, I could see, you know, his honesty in his letters and everything. You know, I let him in a bit more, but it was quite a long time. I mean, it's probably a good couple of years before I started to lower my barriers enough to, you know, start thinking that it may possibly go further. I mean, it wasn't really in my mind at all. It was only, I knew how he felt about me, you know, quite quickly, but he never actually said anything. He never crossed that line to try and impose it on me, you know, which actually I appreciated that respect.
Yeah. When you saw him hike it for the first time, what was that like?
Yeah, that was quite nerve-wracking, actually. I mean, just going into a supermax prison aside, you know, with all the razor wire and guard towers and everything. But just thinking, right, I hope he matches the photos, you know, that I have of him, that he matches what is on paper. So actually, I was very relieved when he came out, you know, and you'll laugh at this, but one of my biggest fears was that he wouldn't have teeth.
Did he have teeth?
He does, thankfully. It wouldn't have gone any further if there'd been no teeth.
So your first impression, Heike, was like, oh gosh, he's actually quite attractive. Did you feel something then, or was it after that?
No, I'd say it was after. I was actually, the first visit, I was more relieved that actually he matched what was on paper.
Yeah.
You know, that he'd been writing. But I think after that first visit, you know, I allowed my barriers to come down a little bit more. You know, because I'd seen what he'd been telling me. And because every time he told me something, you know, or he'd say something like himself, he said, oh, Google me, find out, whatever. And, you know, this is why I grew to trust him, and that over time, because whenever he told me something, it was always correct. You know, he didn't try and pull the wool over my eyes. He didn't try and minimise his role in anything. He didn't make excuses for being in prison. He didn't blame anybody else. There was none of that, and I actually admired that, because, you know, a lot of people would try and minimise their role.
How did he propose to you then? Was it in a letter? Was it when you went to visit?
It was initially in a letter, but then he did again at the visit. And it was at the visit. I'd gone over, I think it was in November, because it was around the time of my birthday. I turned up to visit, and he had his eyebrows tattooed with my first name and middle name. And I said, what the hell have you done? He said, oh yeah, that's your birthday present. I said, well, I don't remember that being on my birthday wish list, you know. But you know, that was a bold statement.
Well, to tattoo someone's name on your face is a huge statement. I can't even get my husband to tattoo a wedding ring on his finger. So to get your name on his face, I mean, he's serious. Like, he's serious. So when he proposed, did you have reservations, or did you just know in your heart and happily accept?
Oh, no, by the time he asked me, and I think it was at that visit where he'd done my name on his eyebrows, it got to the point where it's just actually a natural next step, you know, that you would do in a relationship if you're, you know, if you're that committed and involved. So, I mean, I have no qualms in saying yes.
What was your wedding day like?
The natural thing. So, oh, gosh. Yeah, not the usual.
No.
He had to fill, he had to fill in the paperwork, and I had to fill in paperwork. He had to fill an extra form in because he wouldn't be able to be there. It was what they called a proxy wedding. And Texas did them at the time for incarcerated people and military who'd be away. So the paperwork was filled in. I had to take it then to the courthouse. They sort of, you know, did what they did and issued a marriage license. There was then a 72-hour wait before you could make a date at the court to get married and just sign off and be done with, and then took it back for it to be recorded, and that was it.
But you've also been inspired through conversations with him to write novels. Can you talk to me a bit about that?
Yeah, I was so incensed at some of the things that go on in there. And in William's case, it was the most important or significant was the medical neglect. You know, I mean, he's got health issues, which some of them have been caused by the negligence of the medical care whilst in prison, which has now given him lifelong health issues. And even now, probably once or twice a month, I have to get onto them to say, why hasn't he had these medications? Why aren't you renewed these? Why has he been out of these medications for 2 months already? You know, this was my big motivation, because it's this big, massive agency, and the neglect, which is all I can term it as, is so monumental. It causes so much damage, and I wanted to put it out from the inmates and the family's perspective of, you know, being in prison, rather than it being always from the administration and officers' side of it, because, you know, the sheer exploitation of the inmates and the families, and, you know, the profiteering from them, all that side that nobody actually knows about, that is what mattered to me, that I felt a need of to put out there. So this is what I've tried to do in the books.
Mm. Yeah, it's a phenomenal story. But I suppose the other side to that coin is, I mean, these men and women who are incarcerated have, you know, done awful things in their life. And there's, you know, victims' families who would think very differently to maybe how they're being treated and what's happening. Thank you so much, Heike Phelan. And you can buy her books, Convict Code, Child Convict and Career Convict. It's out now. 2 years' time. If he gets out, give me a bell. We'll sit down and have another chat, okay?
That's brilliant. Thank you so much,
Jen,
for talking.
Thanks, Heike. Woo! What a story. I think I need a moment. Back after this. Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.